This is Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Only on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. Support for Faith Matters is brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine. Now, here are your hosts, Ryan Price and David Cruz.
Welcome to Faith Matters. I'm Ryan Price along with David Cruz, and we have a special treat for you today. Listen in to an interview that we have with Al Petrelli of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Yes, sir. I was looking forward to it, man. Anybody in Texas is a friend of mine, so we'll get to dance.
Wonderful, wonderful. Listen, I'm a Baptist preacher, and he's a Catholic priest, and we got a rock guy on, and that's just that's fun for us, man.
Well, for me as well, so let's see how this works out, all right?
We welcome you, Al Petrelli, with Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and you will be coming to Lubbock. And, Al, how about Wizards in Winter?
Mm-hmm, let's go.
Okay, Al, I've seen lots of folks decorate their houses and then orchestrate the lights to this tune. Tell us about that song.
It's part of one of Paul O'Neill's rock operas. Paul O'Neill is my boss, so as we're discussing everything, I'm always going to kind of refer back to Paul, and I want you guys to understand. And I know a lot of the folks in the great state of Texas will recognize that name, but in case anybody in your listening area does not, Paul O'Neill is the gentleman who invented this thing 20 years ago. Who gave me the great opportunity to help him underscore his writing. He writes these very Frank Capra-esque tales, and he and his writing partner, John Oliver, and myself, have just a great chemistry where we can get into the studio and kind of basically come up with soundtracks for these stories that he has written. Wizards of Winter is kind of just like one of these kind of almost, I wanted to say Disney-esque, but it almost sounds like a mischievous type of tune, you know what I'm saying? You know, if you closed your eyes and you were a child and you would let the soundtrack kind of take your mind away, you know, you could kind of just see like, you know, mischief, you know, in the greatest, cutest, childlike definition of it, you know, nothing bad about it, you know what I mean? But so it's part of a rock opera called The Lost Christmas Eve. Now, the funny thing behind that story, behind that song, excuse me, is that over the years, Paul's pretty adamant about how he wants the light show to be. And he was kind of having a hard time with some of the crew guys back there saying, listen, I need the lights to move in perfect sync with my music. Like the two are on the, what he called, uses the phrase, the central nervous system. Like if the music and the lights were one, this is how I'd want it to be. A very Fantasia-esque, if you will.
This is the light show at one of your concerts, is that?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. So the thing is that the crew was saying at the time, this is going about 10, 11 years ago, well, you know, it's impossible to sync up the lights to that. So Paul said, oh, really? Well, I don't think you guys are right, but, you know, I really wish you could. And then some dude in Ohio, kind of YouTube, I guess whenever the internet kind of kicked in, and YouTubes were just like kind of making their way into mainstream. He had a staple gun and a ladder and a bunch of lights from Home Depot, and he did his entire house, and he had it perfectly synced to every nuance of the music. So Paul turned around to his department head and he said, okay, here's a guy with a ladder in like Columbus, Ohio, and a staple gun who did exactly what I wanted from you guys. I got $10 million in production in this building. You're telling me that you can't do it? You're all either get to work or you're fired. Because the show is paramount to Paul. He wants the folks in the audience to look up and see something that they've never seen before in their life. And he makes us all, he instills that work ethic in every one of us. That if we don't think we could do it, find it inside of us to push harder and dig deeper until you can accomplish what it seems to be unaccomplishable.
Al, a question for you. People try to characterize your music and the music of the orchestra. And I think sometimes, perhaps, unfairly, because really there is no comparison. I think it's so unique. But so, do the comparisons say, for example, to Pink Floyd or to The Who or whatever comparisons have been drawn by people or by listeners, by audiences, do you guys mind? Are those favorable comparisons to your mind? Or how do you feel about that?
Oh. These bands were our heroes growing up, you know. I mean, Pink Floyd and The Who, Led Zeppelin, AC/DC, whatever bands there were. You see, Paul and I grew up in New York City. We grew up in the shadows of Madison Square Garden. So when we would go see concerts, you know, these bands would come into town. The Who would come in, Floyd would come in, Alice Cooper would come in, the Allman Brothers, Zeppelin, whoever it would be. Okay, Rush, whatever band it was. So as kids, we were inspired by these bands because not only musically are they absolutely incredible, but production-wise, these bands were breaking ground. They were pushing, you know, live rock and roll to a whole different level by incorporating either theatrical presentations of their music like Alice would have done or Bowie. Certainly what Andrew Lloyd Webber was accomplishing further up town in the theater district. But when Pink Floyd would come in, or Rush would come in, or Zeppelin would come in, the production became as important part of the show as the music. And that's where, you know, Paul and I came from. So to be compared to these giants in the music world is flattering. I mean, do we sound like them? No. Were we influenced and inspired by them and we wanted to emulate them as kids? Absolutely. So I'll take it. You know, you are a product of your influences, your environment. When Paul and I would walk through Manhattan as kids, you know, you had the garden on 30th Street and 8th Avenue. We slowly but surely walk our way uptown and pass by, you know, Radio City. We passed by Carnegie Hall, you know. We would hear the orchestral presentations going on, or the choir ones. You know, you go past St. Patrick's Cathedral on any Sunday, you can't mistake, you know, the sounds coming out of that beautiful building. You know, you keep working your way uptown, you're in the theater district. So all these sounds, all these sights that we were exposed to as kids just kind of come out through our music. And that's the beauty of art. You're inspired by great art, and you hope to achieve that accomplishment one day as well.
Stay tuned for more of this interview with Al Petrelli of Trans-Siberian Orchestra. You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts.
You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts with your hosts Ryan Price and David Cruz. Brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine.
Today, you're listening to an interview with Al Petrelli of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra on Faith Matters 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. Tell us exactly what a rock opera is, and then also the Christmas trilogy, and how that connects with the Christmas story. So much of your music is tied with this Christmas theme, and of course, you'll be touring here in Lubbock right before Christmas on December 3rd.
A rock opera. I mean, that phrase was coined quite a few years ago. I think The Who, which is one of Paul's favorite bands, had a couple what they called rock operas. You know, they're operas. You know, there's no spoken word, but, you know, everything is sung. Not too different from any of the operas that, you know, we would all have grown up listening to. Rock opera, I think, is just, you know, kind of a name that was given to it because it's a rock band presenting a story. So albums in the late 60s, early 70s took on a little deeper meaning. Instead of having a collection of 8 or 9 or 10 songs that were dependent of each other, you know, clever writers are the guys in The Who, the guys in Pink Floyd, Alice Cooper, whomever it would be, David Bowie, off the top of my head, would write these stories, and kind of each song now became a different part of a bigger picture. I guess the best one, or the biggest one of that era that we were all exposed to, which certainly, you know, caused a whole lot of upheaval in my house growing up, was Jesus Christ Superstar.
Some Baptists couldn't go see that one.
Well, you know what, I grew up, you know, Italian Catholic in 1960s. You know, I'm in a pretty strict household. You know, Catholicism was not very appreciative of Andrew Lloyd Webber's depiction of, you know, those last couple of days in, you know, in Jesus' life. I guess maybe it was a little ahead of its time or whatever, you know, but, you know, my old man was in an uproar. I just happen to love the music. But as, you know, life kind of evolves and the years went by, I guess people kind of learned to appreciate it for what it was, you know, not what they thought it was. But anyway, the point is that was the one that came to everybody's attention real quick because everybody was familiar with that story. Andrew Lloyd Webber just wrote the soundtrack underneath it and depicted the characters in a particular way. So, you know, Pontius Pilate, Herod, and Jesus, Mary Magdalene, and Judas, and all these characters had a song to sing. Now, prior to me understanding or knowing that that was a rock opera, I heard the song, I don't know how to love them, on the radio in New York City way back when. It was sung by a woman named Yvonne Elliman. I just thought it was a pretty song. I had no idea that it was Mary Magdalene singing to Jesus Christ, you know.
Right.
And once you plug that song back into the big picture, you're like, wow, you know, that's much, much deeper than I would have thought originally, you know.
I am a child of the late 60s and 70s, so You just took me back. I think that whole genre of music is so moving, and it is so evocative. It inspires. When people attend a performance by the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, regardless of the setting or the place you guys are performing, what is it that you want people to leave feeling?
Oh, I guess anything, to be honest with you. Happy, sad, elbowed in the ribs, things brought to their attention that they may have overlooked. I mean, art is here to invoke some sort of emotion. I would love to think that people are going to walk away saying, oh, my God, that was beautiful, and, you know, a sense of jubilation walking out of the building. That's cool.
Do you hope some of it has spiritual connotations for the person?
Yes. I mean, absolutely. I think the Paul's rock opera of loss and redemption will, if you're open to the story and you're honest with yourself and you're okay with feeling and letting your emotions come to the surface, I think there will be a sense of spirituality there because, you know, righteousness, good and evil, you know, the internal conflict, all these things that we go through on a daily basis are being brought to life on the stage, you know. The story, you know, depicts a father who's had a really, really horrible hand dealt to him. And he was just lost in life until a series of events occurs to bring him back to where he needed to be. So spirituality in the sense of rebirth, spirituality in the sense of, you know, somehow cathartically dispelling whatever is causing your life to go the wrong way, to learn how to love again, to learn how to look in the mirror and be okay with where you are. Like these guys, this version of it, not necessarily the textbook sense of it, but I'd like people to walk away and say, you know what, bad things happen, and it's not laying down to it that's important. It's how you stand up in the face of adversity. It's how you conduct your life. It's, you know, the integrity in which you walk through life that becomes paramount to people. And sometimes we need to be reminded of that because as bad as we think our problems are, there's always somebody out there with much deeper, much more horrible situations. How do we live through this? How do we walk through this? And how do we become, you know, for men, you know, are you a gentleman? You know, do you handle things with grace and dignity? As a woman, the same thing. Are you a lady? Well, whatever it's going to be.
I'm thinking of one of your songs, Christmas Eve, Sarajevo, 1224. I think we might take a listen and you tell us a little bit about that song and how it connects with some of what you're saying about the human condition, tragedy, and
Absolutely.
Overcoming. Okay, couple of ministers here. We obviously recognize God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, but then beneath that there's this kind of Pink Floyd thing or something going on. But that song has, I think, for me personally, real spiritual power. Can you tell us a little bit about what that song is about?
The song that was originally part of a different rock opera that Paul wrote with his father John Oliva. Now, the song itself is about Christmas Eve, but not necessarily in the definition that most people would think. The story that Paul was writing was about war-torn Yugoslavia back in the late 80s, early 90s. I happened to have the privilege of playing over in Belgrade and Zagreb in 1989, just before the war broke out, with Alice Cooper, and met a lot of great people over there. Didn't think too much of it other than it was just a couple cities on an itinerary, and I went through, I met some people, played some beautiful stadiums, and went back to my home in New York when the tour was over. Not too long after that, the war broke out. A lot of the people that I had met were killed, unfortunately, in the war. A lot of the buildings that I played in were destroyed, and so on and so forth. And, you know, you kind of like, you raise an eyebrow, and you know, say your prayers, and, you know, as a good Catholic, you make the sign of the cross, you know, look up to heaven, wish them all well. And I didn't think too much of it after that. Until 1995, when Paul asked me to work on a record, and he put the faders up, and it was the song Christmas Eve, Sarajevo. Now, when he told me the story that it was about a cellist, a classically trained cellist playing Mozart in the town square in protest of the bombing raids that were occurring and all the, you know, all the horrors that are associated with war, I looked at him and I said, I was in that town square. I know exactly what it smelled like. I know what it felt like. I know what it looked like. And I know what you mean. Just that's when we started putting the pieces together of that track that you're listening to. Somehow the power of that track, again, we're talking, you asked me earlier about, you know, do you want people to feel any particular emotion? No, I just want them to feel an emotion. I'm not that concerned with what emotion that is. Let the music dictate what it is. And if you can honestly listen to it, because it's an honest art form, then it'll affect you in a particular way. That song became the number one requested song in America because it grabbed the American people by the throat and shook them to their core, you know, because it wasn't a traditional Christmas carol. There was something a little deeper to it than that, and where it started was that, and the phone lines lit up because it was an honest piece of art. You know, that's one of the beautiful things about Paul O'Neill's work. It's all honest. If you close your eyes and listen to it and you're honest with yourself, you'll see what he's trying to paint. You know, Christmas Eve, not for everyone, wasn't always, you know, a joyous evening, you know, especially in a war zone, especially if for a homeless person in New York City or anywhere on our planet. Sometimes it's the most horrible, lonely evening of them all, because if you do have a sense of isolation or your family is gone, or when my son, who's in the special forces, is overseas and I have to celebrate the holidays, you know, I got like, you know, the cross I wear around my neck is like gripped in my right hand, and I get really, really religious really quick every time I think about my little boy over there. That's the depth of that song. You know, a lot of people are sitting around with their families, they're holding hands and they're doing whatever, enjoying their traditions and the holidays. For other people, it isn't like that. And as long as we can acknowledge both sides of the fence, I think that's the real meaning behind what Paul wants. He just wants everybody to be aware that there's always something else going on besides the obvious.
Stay tuned for more of this interview with Al Petrelli of Trans-Siberian Orchestra. You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts.
This is Faith Matters on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. Hosted by Ryan Price and David Cruz, and brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine.
Today, you're listening to an interview with Al Petrelli of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra on Faith Matters 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts.
Al, I'm fascinated by your story just now from a number of angles, but your description of doing that in Sarajevo, here's how it speaks to me. You describe this backdrop of sorrow, of pain, of conflict, mm-hmm. war, right? Things that are beautiful have that backdrop. And sure. It reminds me of the first Christmas. Christ was born in a circumstance of great poverty in a world that was a world filled with and racked with pain and violence. This is a society he was born into and the circumstances of his birth. How meaningful it is to hear that even in the midst of sorrow, even in the midst of pain, even in the midst of war, as you described, that there could be something so beautiful.
Exactly. Again, kind of a metaphor for, well, you know, when you're in a really bad situation, how do we deal with it? You know, it's like they say, I'm an amateur boxer, and I have a coach who's very patient with me because I'm pretty terrible. But point is, one of the lessons is, listen, when you get knocked down, it's not the fact that you got knocked down. It's how quick can you get back up in the face of adversity, recollect your thoughts, and conduct yourself with, again, dignity and grace. Paul's lessons to be loving, to be caring, to be just, to be gracious, to take care of your fellow man, your fellow brother, whatever endearment you want to give it. You know, I mean, he's the most generous person I've ever met in my life. The whole point of us being out here is to share a story with you in a very, you know, very Frank Capra-esque tale. But it's not that different than, you know, It's a Wonderful Life or some of the other things that we've all kind of gravitated towards, you know. The non-religious depictions of the holidays, you know, some of these stories that don't necessarily deal with the Bible version of it, but yet at the center of it, what doesn't it deal with the same thing anyway? You know, right and wrong, you know, redemption, loss, taking care of somebody who needs it at that point, self-realization, you know, whatever it is, walking away from one of our shows will hopefully, you know, at least like nudge you in the ribs a little bit to say, hey, you know what? Made me think of so-and-so I haven't spoken to in a lot of years. I don't remember why I don't talk to him anymore. Let me reach out and get him on the phone.
Ryan and I were intrigued reading your bio and a little bit about the orchestra, about the performance at the Brandenburg Gate in Berlin.
Well, the band was invited to go play New Year's Eve at the Brandenburg Gate. I'm taking the band over there again. I'm not going to read too deep into anything other than it's a great opportunity to reach out to the German people on a very important night to them. And the historical significance behind it, I just find it fascinating that here's an American rock and roll band playing in Berlin.
Well, I would say that. I would say that's an understatement. I mean,
I'm going to remain very understated about that one. You know, listen, I grew up, you and I both said we grew up in the 60s. Okay, so all the East Germany, West Germany, all the Cold War stuff, me hiding under my desk in kindergarten, you know, in case we were going to get bombed. All those things that were going on during that era, in 1989, I was over there when the war came down. Now, 24 years, 25 years after the war came down, to turn around and just see there's nothing left there. All the good that has occurred in the last 25 years since the demise of that war, there's no recollection of it anymore other than the history books and maybe a couple like monuments somewhere. But there's going to be a million people in that town square in front of those gates celebrating New Year.
We've got time to sample one more song. Let's go with Christmas Canon. What an amazing song. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, it was originally, you know, the theme for Taco Bell's Canon, you know. And just Paul's got a very clever way of kind of connecting the dots. He and his writing partner, John Oliva, were very great at writing original music and also kind of digging into the classical catalog and picking out things that they felt would also be a great representation of what the story, where the story needs to go. So that one in particular was just obviously a beautiful, very well-known, very famous musical underscoring to a lyric that these two guys put together over the top of it. And I get a kick out of playing it every night because, first of all, recording it was a lot of fun because there's a bunch of kids in the studio, which after about 3 or 4 hours. The kids are great. The parents get to be a bit much after a while, but it was a lot of fun. Live, we presented in such a way that, you know, the audience just kind of goes back. You know, they're back in their chairs, and they smile, and they're relaxed. And what it does is it inspires a lot of the kids in the audience saying, hey, you know what? I like that. Man, I didn't know I'd like classical music. I want to be like these guys. I got 12-year-olds running out of the building wanting to take violin and guitar lessons the next day, or singing lessons, or piano lessons, or they want to dance, or they want to do something, anything to get them off the computer and the video games, you know what I mean? That's really the hidden secret in being me, in my job, is to watch it maybe create a ripple effect where it'll change the direction of somebody's life. You know, if they're inspired by the arts because of a show that I brought to town, then that was a really, really good night for me. Because every day in life, we're either going to learn something or we're going to create something. As long as we accomplish one of those two things, it was a good day.
Al, you speak philosophically about the power of music to transform us, change us. I would use the language of minister to us, touch us. I think that's a God thing. But it's just there's an inherent power to bring something forth out of someone else in this thing called music.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in that. I mean, there's an intangible to it. I mean, listen, I'm 51 years old. I've been doing this since I saw the Beatles play in 1964 on Ed Sullivan. So it grabbed me in the deepest part of who I am and will never let go of me. I mean, it's not a job. It's not an occupation. It's not a hobby. It's the air in my lungs and the blood that pumps through my veins. You know, it grabbed me and never let go of me, much to my mother's chagrin, but what are you going to do? It can change your life. It can change people. I mean, listen, the church has been singing since how long? You know, I mean, people, you know, there's always been music somewhere in some form since, you know, day one. Somebody's been singing, whether it's to rejoice or whether it's to express sorrow, whatever it is. It has been an outlet. It has been an artistic means to, again, going back to one of the first things you said, to evoke an emotion or to express an emotion. So if it grabs a kid, one kid on tour of the 1.2 million tickets that we're going to sell these years, God willing, two children over the course of that tour are inspired to pursue a life in the arts as opposed to a life of sitting as a couch potato, then that's all the payment I ever really need.
Well put, Al. I just wanted to say to you that we're very blessed to have your group coming to Lubbock. I hope it's a wonderful performance. And let me just say to you, Buon Natale and Felice Anno Nuovo. God bless you.
Grande saluto a tutta famiglia, padre. That's 1,000 salutes to you and your family, and God bless. And I can't wait to see you guys in the great state of Texas.
Al, thanks so much. December 3rd, you'll be in Lubbock with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Tickets are on sale at selectaseatlubbock.com or at 806-770-2000. Thanks so much, Al, for not only being with us today, but for what you do with the gifts that God has given to you. My prayers for you and for your son as well, who's serving our country in this military, and we give thanks for that.
Well, God bless, and I thank you all, and I can't wait to see you, and all my best to your families, everybody in your listening audience, and I'll talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Faith Matters. You can catch this program and all others on our website at kttz.org. And as we go out today, one more song from Trans-Siberian Orchestra, Dreams of Fireflies on a Christmas Night.